No.
Yep.
You are hilarious. You mac and cheese. You're a good looking son of a bitch. You're a real broad lover. You're ham and eggs. And you're a grazer. So be sure to keep it Christmas.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
My job is to walk around the subject like a photographer. Perfect angle, perfect light, gotta develop the picture just right, cause so many poets just write, and I still do my homework, so I bop hard to the chalkboard. Like my man HB and Enigma said, don't wanna be no Al Bundy poet, sitting back on the couch, back slouched, tins in my pants, talking about how I used to be the man, used to run around the world when it slams, but now I ain't gotta write tight, cause everybody know who the fuck I am, and only old fans praise me, and young cats like Talama AC maybe, nah, fuck that, you must be crazy, if he was hot back in the days, he got lazy, his shit don't faze me, hell nah, that's why I don't just raise the bar, bring it to his jaw like a racehorse, and if he try to show off, I pull back on the reins like I'm trying to rip his face off. Trying to prove yourself till I'm AC in the house, this ain't the place for it. Been pimping the same three poems for 2 years, I tell you to your face, you's a fake poet. That poetry can't change it, just means that people have to wait to see you live to realize you ain't saying it. Might been writing for a while, but your style's still juvenile, so who is you playing with? You looking at Max Weber, Herb Ritz, the microphone is a camera, every poem is a cover shot, while these I'm just hoping to get discovered off writing covers of what I got. My mother did not struggle for 9 months for me to write poems. Did you get credit for making me your credit, or pay down your credit, or I'll be forced to set it off like strafe. Loose abuse could cause you to lose a tooth. Just sit back, retire, watch me school the youth. My photo shoot to the truth, the proofs in the proof. Take a loop, have a gander at the manner of stamina, Mr. Ridiculous, because no other poet's camera can picture this. My job is to make your features seem like an iPod sitting on a tripod, till your moms be like, why God, and your pops bounce through the middle of your set like, look, just tell them I said nice job. Even take pictures of your entire operation like the Vice Squad, to the point that they don't know whether to call me Kojak or Kodak. Portfolio so fat that they don't require mind frames as times change, till I'm aims, clicks, shoots, portraits, landscapes, groups. You need a epitaph of my autograph and your photograph. If they familiar with my work and they hear yours, they sure to laugh. You're supposed to have respect for a mic check whose description is this poet's gift must come straight from God, and if yours did not, then picture this. I mean, please. Who else in spoken word deserve more cheese? Freeze frame, seize game, lights change, stage bleeds till he ends. More versatile than your wide angle lens, your panorama pretends while mine spins ubiquitous. Sometimes I feel like I'll be taking pictures with a satellite while these other poets are standing around hoping that their camera phones might picture this.
This is the conspiratorial view of history as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Just on Monday, a federal judge ruled that under the right circumstances, surveillance cameras can be placed on private property without a warrant. We in this country have moved into a surveillance state, or more accurately, the surveillance state has moved into this country, where our rights, freedoms, and privacy are systematically being taken away, all in the name of protecting our way of life. It's time to wake up, folks. The only thing threatening our way of life is the looming nanny state itself that will stop at nothing to put you and me under the thumb of its control. It's time to stand up, speak out, and break the set.
Planted by the water, I shall not be moved.
We move
move on to some breaking news tonight. Truckers are staging an apparent sit-in at the Port of Vancouver. This is a webcam shot of the port tonight. Trucks are reportedly crammed inside the Van Term area at the foot of Clark Drive, and they're not moving. There are reports police have been called in. It's not clear what the truckers are protesting, but it appears they're staying there overnight.
Not be moved. On the way to heaven, I shall not be moved, just like a tree planted by the water. I shall not be moved. Oh, I shall not. I shall not be moved. I shall not. I shall not be moved, just like a tree planted by the water. I shall not be moved.
We have some new developments and stories we've been following this morning. The University of Southern California has lifted a lockdown it put in place following a late-night shooting at a campus Halloween party. The school's Department of Public Safety says shots were fired following an argument between two men last night at USC's main campus in Los Angeles. One of the men was critically wounded. Another three people were also shot. Their injuries not life-threatening. Two suspects are now in custody.
Oh, preacher, I shall not be moved. Oh, preacher, I shall not be moved, just like a tree planted by the water. I shall not be moved.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are in the middle of a blizzard here. We're in the higher elevations of the mountains of West Virginia in Preston County. It's one of 11 counties in this state currently under a blizzard warning. Actually, this area is under what you would say a triple threat. We've got the blizzard warning, we've got a high wind warning, and we've got a flood warning all in effect right here. It's only going to get worse, and it will go, at least that blizzard warning, until about 6 o'clock tonight, we are told. The only way you're seeing us is the lights of the headlights of our vehicles. The power is out here. About 120,000 people in the state without electricity. But the big problem, you can see, it's just piling up behind us, the mountain already forming in the back of this parking lot here. And this is a really wet, heavy, thick, difficult snow. I mean, you just pick up huge chunks of it here, and it's coming down faster than the plows can really take care of. And the other problem is, of course, with that heavy, wet snow, it's pulling down the power lines. There was plenty of light when we first got here. Now it's totally dark.
I'm sanctified and holy. I shall not be moved. Sanctified and holy. I shall not be moved, just like a tree planted by the water. I shall not be moved. Why? I shall not be moved. I shall not. I shall not be moved, just like a tree planted by the water. I shall not be moved.
Here's the message circulating online. After you take the kids trick-or-treating, keep your costume on, round up some friends, and kill as many pit bulls as you can before midnight. This message started making its way around the internet this spring. It went viral, and it upset so many people that at least three Facebook pages have now popped up, begging others not to hurt the animals.
Good boy. Thurston County deputies shot and killed a 26-year-old vandalism suspect. Shot and killed a 26-year-old vandalism suspect. Vandalism suspect. closed overnight. It happened at a property in Little Rock on Wattle Creek Road between 2 and 3 this morning. The suspect is accused of breaking the windows at a gas station grocery store before that confrontation. Surveillance video shows him smashing through a window. Police eventually tracked him down to the scene where his parents lived. That's the broken window right there. After a short confrontation with the suspect's mom, the man reportedly came out with a pool cue. Deputies tried to tase him. He didn't go down. Officials say when a deputy slipped, the suspect started toward him with that pool cue, and that's when another deputy shot and killed the 26-year-old. Vandalism.
Everybody be cool, this is a robbery!
Kids robbing kids and their parents in Tacoma. Five teenagers are now locked up, accused of holding up some trick-or-treaters on Halloween. They robbed six different groups of people near 15th and Sprague Avenue. Detectives say the boys, between 13 and 17 years old, made off with cell phones and backpacks, costumes, even candy.
Fall break. Every year, thousands of college co-eds descend on Vermont for fun in the foliage.
Yeah! Fall break!
But what dangers lurk in the crisp autumn air? Out-of-control pumpkin patch parties. Underage hot toddy drinking. Maple syrup binging. And wet sweater contests. If you're a parent, don't miss this special report.
During a career day presentation at a New Mexico middle school, a police officer shot a 10-year-old boy with a taser. What was the crime that the boy committed? Well, he refused to wash the cop's car during a demonstration. While this happened last May, the news came out when the lawsuit was filed this week on behalf of the boy. The shooting of two barbs into the 10-year-old's chest was allegedly an accident.
I think he misremembers.
As Motor Transportation Officer Chris Webb thought, the weapon was unloaded. He jokingly pointed the taser at the boy after he said he didn't want to wash the patrol officer's car. And Officer Webb said, "Let me show you what happens to people that don't listen to the police." He then proceeded to shock the boy with an equivalent of 50,000 volts into that little boy's body. As a consequence, the boy lost consciousness. He still has scars from the barbs on his chest, according to the lawsuit, and Officer Webb was suspended for 3 days as a consequence.
Seattle Catholic high school principal steps down over allegations of abuse.
The former principal at a Catholic high school in Seattle is accused of sexual abuse of a minor. Good evening, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I'm Marie Arce-Gadun.
And I'm David Rose. Tonight, the Archdiocese of Seattle is caught in the crossfire. Hannah Kim is here now with the latest on the allegations. Hannah?
David, the Archdiocese of Seattle owns O'Day High School, and now the former principal, Brother Carl Walsack, is accused of sexually abusing a minor. But it's not a student at O'Day High School. The allegations stem from the 70s when Brother Carl Walsack worked at a school in Chicago. But the survivors' network of those abused by priests is out front and center, accusing school and church officials of keeping parents at O'Day High School in the dark about the news for months, calling it a classic cover-up. The Archdiocese of Seattle released a statement tonight saying O'Day High School's board learned about the accusations today. They say Walsack is denying the sexual abuse allegations, but did decide to resign.
CCTV footage of a four-year-old being abused in China has sent shockwaves through the country. The video, captured in a nursery school, shows the girl being tossed to the ground before being kicked by her teacher. She then picks up the girl, who local media say had fallen unconscious, and drops her on the ground. According to reports, the child, who is recovering in hospital, is now severely brain damaged and, despite two operations, can no longer walk or talk properly. The teacher, who initially denied any wrongdoing, has since been prosecuted.
Kids were sexually assaulted, locked into closets, and forced to eat their own vomit, all while in the safekeeping of the state's Child Protective Services.
Today, those children, now adults, have settled a multi-million dollar case with the state.
The problem solvers have spent 4 years investigating problems with CPS. Como 4's Tracy Vetter is here with the latest on this case. Tracy?
The state has agreed to pay the four children in this case $5.3 million. Small satisfaction, they tell me, for the years of abuse they say they should never have suffered.
If the kings are not righteous, your heroes are not strong. Everything is going to get better. It's written in the stars. We all do. They think we are. You can't find. Wisconsin.
More fallout from the Penn State sex abuse scandal. The university's former president, Graham Spanier, is now charged with perjury, endangering children, and other counts related to the alleged cover-up. He worked at Penn State for 16 years prior to Jerry Sandusky's crimes going public last year. New charges were also filed against athletic director Tim Curley and retired vice president Gary Schultz.
When Nelly the elephant packed her trunk, she made sure to take a Korean dictionary. Yes, that's right, an elephant in Korea has started to speak the language by mimicking his zookeeper.
I never imagined that an elephant could say the same word as a human by sticking his trunk in his mouth. It was amazing and marvelous.
22-year-old Kaushik's talent has been confirmed by a team of scientists who think he may have started imitating human speech because he was lonely. And for those watching who don't speak Korean quite as well as Kaushik, he's saying,
"Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Oppan Gangnam Style.
A man strangles an octopus with his bare hands along Seattle's Elliott Bay.
And these series of photos posted online have sparked a major controversy.
A man strangles an octopus with his bare hands,
causing the Department of Fish and Wildlife to get several calls. Tonight, we wanted to know, did the man do anything wrong?
A man strangles an octopus with his bare hands.
Well, it all unfolded out here on the water yesterday, and while it upset some people, Fish and Wildlife says no laws were broken.
A man strangles an octopus with his bare hands.
Pennsylvania man is licking his wounds tonight after allegedly narrowly escaping a harrowing attack.
He says he was out hanging in the woods in his Winnebago, minding his own business, when a tall, hairy behemoth came after him and started throwing rocks.
He says it was a Bigfoot and claims this isn't the first time one came after him.
I grab a crocodile by his tail. Handcuff the judge and throw the cops in jail. This woman break down and cry. Sometimes I feel like I can't fly.
I terrorize your hood, flashing max on the cop the way a gangster should. I snatch food on the mouth of a tiger, take a gasoline bath and I walk through fire. Bear hug a grizzly, suck milk from a titty, take the shards of hat from his head and use it for a frisbee. Spit in the crocodile face, have a menage a trois with two female apes. Then sleep in the barrel of butcher knives. I drink honey straight from the beehive. Bungee jumping off the Empire State, butt naked, rollerblading across the Golden Gate, butt naked.
Just after 9 last night, three men wearing Grim Reaper costumes and masks went to a home in this Beacon Hill neighborhood. When the homeowner opened the door, the criminals pulled out handguns, got inside and stole cash, jewelry, and CDs before running out. Wearing Grim Reaper costumes and masks.
With the baddest man alive and I don't plan to die. When the Grim Reaper come, I look right in his eye. I bust open the face of the Witch of the East. Tell the great white shark to go and brush his teeth.
A California surfer survives a terrifying run-in with a shark. Check out the chunk that the fish took out of the surfboard. Police say the 25-year-old was riding the waves Eureka's Bunker surf spot during when the shark attacked. He was pulled from the water, rushed into a pickup truck to a nearby hospital, and we're told the man will need surgery, but hopefully he'll be okay.
The baddest man alive, and I don't plan to die. Come on.
I'm the baddest man alive. I don't take no meds and I take no drive. Sometimes I feel like I can fly. I'm the baddest man alive. I'm the baddest man alive.
Pumpernickel.
Get up, Grandpa. Don't you know it's daylight saving time?
Yeah, I know it. I don't know who in the world ever got it up. It don't do nobody a bit of good. For years and years, folks got along with an old grandfather's clock. Or just a common old sundial sitting out on a rock. Then the dollar watch, it had its day, and the wristwatch, it was fine. Then along came a man that ruined us all with daylight saving time. I'm a-hunting that man who first thought up daylight saving time. Until he moved the clocks around, everything was a-going fine. But I guess he's hid and won't come out, he knows he's out of line. I get up late, have to wait, can't keep it straight. Who did he hate? I mean the man that first thought up daylight saving time.
Fall back and spring ahead, it's part of our lives now. The idea being that we get more daylight during daylight savings time. In truth, what we get is a little more time in the evening of daylight and a little less time in the morning. The reader asks a really good question here, though, because a lot of studies have suggested that there's not a lot of benefits to daylight savings time. A 2009 study showed that we actually don't save any money on energy because we spend more money heating our houses against the money we save on lighting. A 2011 study showed that workplace injuries actually increase slightly on the Monday after daylight savings goes into effect. That's because people get about 40 minutes less sleep on average. And a more recent study this year showed that there was cyber loafing taking place on the Monday after it goes into effect, people goofing off because they're tired. So why do we still have it if it's not such a great deal? Well, this is a political science question, not a science question, not a science problem like you'd have in a physics textbook. The answer is something called the tragedy of the commons, according to political scientists, where things that have a few special interests pulling for them, and federal law is still in effect that are tough to change, they stay around, even if lots of people are kind of unhappy. It's only until there's a broad movement against something like this that the special interests and the laws that are in the books actually get overcome.
His followers all will argue that they've gained an hour of life by moving all the clocks around, but I can't see they're right. The sun still rises just the same and sets just as before.
they'd rise 60 minutes early, maybe they'd have an hour more. So why not leave the clocks alone so folks won't be confused? Let them hit the floor an hour before if it's daylight that they choose.
Look, folks, I want to remind you, this is the end of daylight saving time tonight. It's Mitt Romney's favorite time of the year because he gets to turn the clock back. He wants to turn that clock back so desperately. This time he can really do it tonight. It happens. I can get in trouble, but I tell you, man.
I'm a hunting that man who first thought up daylight saving time. If he will prove why the clock will move, then I'll admit it's fine. I've twisted my old clock around till it ain't worth a dime. I'm a counting sheep, losing sleep, get up late, miss the date. Couldn't get there in a Cadillac date. Try as they will, they'll never gain with daylight saving time.
My friends, I have come home to my own county to vote with my fellow townsmen. My people have voted here in Dutchess County for more than a century, and I cast my first vote here in 1903. Tomorrow, 55 million Americans are eligible to vote, and I hope that all of those 55 million will vote. I like to think of these millions as individual citizens from Maine to the southern tip of California, from Key West to Puget Sound, farmers who stop their fall plowing long enough to drive into town with their wives, wage earners stopping on the way to work or the way home, business and professional men and women, town and city housewives, and that great company of youth for whom this year's first vote will be a great adventure. Americans have had to put up with a good many things in the course of our history, but the only rule we've ever put up with is the rule of the majority. That is the only rule we ever will put up with. Spelled with a small d, we are all of us Democrats. In some places in the world today, the tides are running against democracy. But our faith has not been unsettled. We believe in democracy because of our traditions. But we believe in it even more because of our experience. Here in the United States, we've been a long time at the business of self-government. The longer we are at it, the more certain we become that we can continue to govern ourselves, that progress is on the side of majority rule, that if mistakes are to be made, we prefer to make them ourselves and to do our own correcting. When you and I stand in line tomorrow for our turn at the polls, we will stand in a line that reaches back across the entire history of our nation. Washington stood in that line, and Jefferson, and Jackson, and Lincoln. And in later days, Cleveland stood there, and Theodore Roosevelt, and Woodrow Wilson. All of these in their day waited their turn to vote, and rubbing elbows with them, their voting equals is a long succession of American citizens whose names are not known to history, but who by their vote helped to make history. Every man and woman who has voted in the past has had a hand in the making of the United States of the present. Every man and woman who votes tomorrow will have a hand in the making of the United States of the future. To refuse to vote is to say I am not interested in the United States of the future. We who live in a free America know that our democracy is not perfect, but we are beginning to know also that in self-government, as in many other things, progress comes from experience. People do not become good citizens by mandate. They become good citizens by the exercise of their citizenship, and by the discussions, the reading, the campaign give and take, which help them to make up their minds how to exercise that citizenship. Not only are people voting in larger numbers this year, they also know more this year than ever before about the real issues. They are thinking for themselves. They listen to both sides. They no longer accept at face values opinions or even statements from newspapers, from political spokesmen, and from the so-called leaders of their communities. They insist on checking up. I doubt if there was ever more downright political intelligence at the average American fireside than there is today. For a century and a half, we have had here free education and a free press, free public forums, and a free pulpit. For more than a decade, we have had a free radio. The American citizen of 1936, therefore, is a product of free institutions. His mind has been sharpened by the exercise of freedom. That is why I have no fear, either of the threats of demagogues or the ambitions of dictators. Neither can get far or long thrive among a people who have learned to think for themselves and who have the courage to act as they think.
Coming up, are the poor being disenfranchised by voting places accessible only by hot air balloons? But first, we turn to Washington, D.C., where America's roommates are holding a rally as part of their new One Vote Doesn't Matter political action campaign. The rally, which drew thousands of roommates, ranging from the guy who keeps all of his groceries in his room to the guy whose name the lease is under, is just a part of a surging grassroots movement to spread the message that one person's vote can't make a difference if you really, really think about it.
You know, this is like the most important election of our lifetime, and we just want to get the word out that it's already been decided in some smoke-filled boardroom. You know, I pretty much minored in poli-sci, so I think I get this stuff.
The group, which has volunteers across the country, is launching a nationwide public education initiative, and their phone bank has already reached thousands of potential voters.
Are you looking forward to Election Day?
Joining us now is Jason Copeland at a One Vote Doesn't Matter rally in the nation's capital. Jason, how would you describe the energy there?
Yeah, hi, Andrea. I'd say it's a definite chill vibe. I just saw the roommate whose only friend seems to be his younger brother and the guy who just has an air mattress in his room passing out flyers together. And the roommate's got a huge boost today as Hollywood actor Topher Grace just finished speaking to the crowd.
He seems like the perfect face for the campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely someone's snarky roommate, Andrea.
Now, Jason, how did this sudden roommate's activism get started?
Well, sources are tracing the movement to a conversation with Zeke, the guy who isn't technically a roommate but is always around and always has weed. Reached for comment, Zeke spelled out his message to voters saying, quote, "Dude, are we actually still talking about this? Vote or don't vote, I don't give a shit. Hey, can I use your Netflix password?" The roommate's message has been met with some criticism, including eye rolls and questions of, seriously, you're not going to vote?
Oh my God, seriously?
There is an incredible energy here, palpable, and the roommates do make some interesting points. The Electoral College, it is weird.
Yes, well, thank you for the report, Jason. All right, now the campaign is expected to last another half hour or until whenever Kevin gets home, since he has the keys.
Whatever, man. You got this guy Mitt Romney. Look at him. He only cares about rich people. And Obama, you're gonna vote for him just because he's president? Have you ever seen anybody actually look at your vote? Have you seen that? Anyways, like, the voting place is all the way out in, well, I don't know where it is, actually.
How dare you?
really possible that a political contest now expends $2 billion? Yes, it is, because it does, and maybe even more. It is an insult to democracy to spend $2 billion on a campaign. It is an insult to thought. On partisanship, politics is about everything now but politics. It's a tag. Party loyalty exists somewhere on a sorry continuum between fanship and fanaticism. People read, watch, and talk only with their own side. If you support Obama, you're for all that is progressive, open-minded, and modern. You're a cosmopolitan savant. If you support Romney, you're a patriot, helping to save America from blundering into socialism and bankruptcy. These are not points to be argued. They are declarations of identity.
Well, this is a busy little corner half a mile down the road from where I live, where all these beautiful women work the sidewalk a little taken again. Oh, it's like an escalator walkway. I just mind my own business, make sure my money's hit.
That's why you're crying? Oh, it'll be over soon, Abby. Okay?
I'm tired of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
That's why you're crying? The election will be over soon, okay?
Okay.
Oh.
Leave a cartoon color legacy or a common watermark. But we always back the underdog, cause he's the only one we trust. And if that one's for the winner,
this is a call for major street protests over the stolen election of 2012. I'm talking major f***ing protests. Quebec on steroids, Spain on meth, Occupy on Viagra, Egypt on Fun Dip. Snorted. Did he just call for a protest over something that hasn't happened yet? Yeah, I did. I'm predicting that the numbers will not add up, and that this coming election will be a farce, a show, a charade. I'm predicting that between the hours of midnight and 2 a.m., a sudden and inexplicable switch of 300,000 votes will happen in the electronic vote count of Ohio, while the numbers are being tallied in a basement somewhere by a Republican-controlled technology company. It will be a statistically impossible chance that the number change is genuine, and then most of the counties in Ohio will destroy all election records, making it impossible to do a recount. I'm predicting that. I did it again. I confused my history papers with my prediction papers. What I just read was what really did happen on election night 2004, handing the election to George W. Bumblefuck. But to make sure that doesn't happen again, we've carefully given the voting machines over to people we all trust, the Romney family. That's right. The voting machines in Ohio are now owned by a company called Hart InterCivic, the majority share of which is owned by HIG Capital. Who are the major investors in HIG Capital? Almost entirely former Bain Capital employees, as well as Mitt Romney, Ann Romney, Tag Romney, and Tiglet Romney, or whatever the last one is. In order to make sure we have a fair election, we've given the already shady voter bots over to the dude who's in the election? You could literally have a more reliable result by giving the vote count over to Bernie Madoff and the insane clown posse. And right now many of you are going, it doesn't matter, Obama and Romney are the same on 90% of the issues. And you know what? You're right. But this video is not about making sure Obama or Romney or Jill Stein or write-in candidate Suckman wins the vote. It's about a true and genuine election. If the fucking exit polls show something different from the computers, then we all need to lose our shit. We all need to freak out worse than shaved-headed Britney or long-bearded Mel Gibson or Chris Brown on a Tuesday. Don't go to sleep. Don't beer bong a stiff drink and call it a night. Don't click off your TV and take your anger out on your penis. 300,000 votes flipped in Ohio in 2004. Thousands of paper ballots lost in Florida in 2000. Hundreds of thousands of votes fought with in Wisconsin in 2012. And each time, everybody goes, man, that's such a democracy buzzkill. It might take 2 pints of Ben and Jerry's to get over this. If the polling data says one thing, and the numbers coming out of Tag Romney's Butthole Technologies Incorporated says something completely different, lose your goddamn mind. Consider this a preemptive call to action against those who want to turn our democracy into one of those games at the state fair where you win a prize for getting the basketball through the hoop, but secretly, the hoop is smaller than the basketball.
No! Stop it already!
This November, send a message to Washington. Vote for nobody. Nobody is an honest politician. Nobody will keep his campaign promises. Nobody will listen to your concerns. Nobody will help the poor and unemployed. Nobody cares about you. Nobody has all the answers, and nobody will represent you. Make sure to let Washington know that you think nobody should run your life. Vote nobody, because if nobody wins, everybody wins. Paid for by the Coalition to Elect Nobody.
I'm tired of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
That's why you're crying?
How dare you?
Now, having somewhat successfully established my press credentials, and because you and I have at least one thing in common, which is that all of us deal with language all the time, I thought it might be nice today for me to come to you with some of my language complaints. Certainly not to blame them on you, although, of course, you are implicated. And not that you can help it. I mean, the problem is really with the people you cover, the politicians, the celebrities, and the lawyers. And although their level of insincerity is astonishing, it's still kind of fun to hear them talk. In particular, it's fun to listen to Washington talk. Whenever the issue of term limits comes up, I always tell people the only term limits I'm interested in would be to limit some of the terms used by politicians. They speak, of course, with great caution, because they must take care not to actually say anything. Proof of this, according to their own words, is that they don't actually say things, they indicate them. As I indicated yesterday, and as the president indicated to me, but sometimes they don't indicate, they suggest. Let me suggest that as I indicated yesterday, I haven't determined that yet. See, they don't decide, they determine. If it's a really serious matter, they make a judgment. I haven't made a judgment on that yet. When the hearings are concluded, I will make a judgment, or I might make an assessment. I'm not sure. I haven't determined that yet. But when I do, I will advise you. They don't tell, they advise. I advised him that I had made a judgment. Thus far, he hasn't responded. They don't answer, they respond. He hasn't responded to my initiative. An initiative is an idea that isn't going anywhere. When he responds to my initiative, I will review his response, take a position, and make a recommendation. See, they don't read, they review. They don't have opinions, they take positions, and they don't give advice, they make recommendations. And so, at long last, after each has responded to the other's initiatives, and each has reviewed the other's responses, and everyone has taken a position, made a judgment, and offered a recommendation, now they have to do something. But that would be much too direct. So instead, they address the problem. We're addressing the problem, and we'll soon be proceeding. That's a big activity here in Washington. Proceeding. They're always proceeding or moving forward. A lot of that goes on. Senator, have you solved that problem? Well, we're moving forward on that. And when they're not moving forward, they're moving something else forward, such as the process. We have to move the process forward so we can implement the provisions of the initiative in order to meet these challenges. No one has problems anymore. Challenges. That's why we need people who can make the tough decisions. Tough decisions like how much soft money can I expect to collect in exchange for my core values? So that I can continue my work in government. Of course, no politician would admit to such a lowly station as working in government, serving the nation. I'm serving the nation. Another favorite distortion is public service. I'm in public service. I like America, don't you? The food is great, but the public service is terrible. Now, folks, a question for you. Do you think it's possible that one of these politicians, whose judgment is so poor that he honestly thinks of himself as serving the nation, might occasionally be expected to indulge in a little patriotism? Huh? What do you think? Well, of course, not only is it possible, it's inevitable, and that's when he's at his very best. That's when he trots out the really good stuff all across this great land of ours, the greatest nation on earth, the greatest nation in the history of the world. And in times of military crisis, you can be sure that someone in a suit in this town will eventually plant himself in front of a camera and carry on a great deal about the most powerful nation on the face of the earth. Now, normally, during peacetime, the politicians will refer to people in the military as our young men and women stationed around the world. But in wartime, they quickly become our brave young fighting men and women stationed halfway around the world in places whose names they can't pronounce, wondering if they'll ever see their loved ones again. For added emotional impact, sons and daughters can always be substituted for men and women. And so I think we can sum this up by saying that where the military is concerned, the extent of a politician's insincerity can be measured by how far around the world our soldiers are stationed and whether or not any of them can pronounce it. Incidentally, another way of expressing this sentiment is to say we're sending our young men and women to places the average American can't find on a map. I've always thought it was kind of funny and somewhat out of character for a politician to go out of his way to point out the low level of American intelligence when indeed his very job depends upon it. It would seem to fly in the face of that other rhetorical standby of theirs, the American people are a lot smarter than they're given credit for. This is said with a straight face, although it is obvious, of course, that the proposition is being stated precisely backwards. But the politicians, God bless them, or something like that, they're at their most entertaining when they're in trouble. When they're in trouble, their explanations usually begin simply with words like miscommunication. What did you do wrong, Senator? Well, it was a miscommunication. Or I was quoted out of context. Better yet, and more ironic, they twisted my words. Such a nice touch. A person who routinely spends his days torturing the language complains, they twisted my words. Then, As the controversy continues to heat up, he moves to his next level of complaint. The whole thing has been blown out of proportion. It's always the whole thing. Apparently, no one has ever claimed that only a small portion of something was blown out of proportion. Has to be the whole thing. That's because now he's feeling the heat. And so, as time passes and more evidence comes in, he suddenly changes directions and tells us, we're trying to get to the bottom of this. Now he's on the side of law and order. It's jiu-jitsu, really. We're trying to get to the bottom of this so we can get the facts out to the American people. That's always a nice touch, American people. In fact, at this point, he might even say, I'm willing to trust in the fairness of the American people. Clearly, he's preparing us for something. And so, when finally all the facts come out and our subject seems quite guilty, he employs that sublime use of the passive voice, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made, don't look at me, probably someone in my office. Things are moving faster now. Mistakes were made is rapidly overtaken by there is no evidence. No one has proven anything. Eventually, I will be exonerated. I have faith in the American judicial system. And that certain sign that things are closing in, whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty? Whatever happened? Well, nah, yeah. Well, he's about to find out. And we know this must be true because the next thing we hear from him is, I just want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life. I just want to put this behind me. That's an expression we hear a lot these days in all walks of life. From people in all walks of life, usually the person in question has committed some unspeakable act. Yes, it's true, I strangled my wife, shot the triplets, set fire to the house, and sold my young son to an old man on the train. But now, I just want to put this thing behind me. Get on with me. That's the problem in this country. Too many people getting on with their lives. I think what we really need more of is ritual suicide. You know? Never mind the press conferences. Get the big knife out of the drawer. Personally, what I want to do is to put this, I want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life. Thing behind me and get on with my life. I'll repeat that for you. Personally, I want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life. Thing behind me and get on with my life. And just to round out this section, let's hope there's a special place in hell reserved for those who have recently decided to take responsibility for their actions. That's the big thing now, taking responsibility for your actions, like it's a recent discovery. You know, he's taking responsibility for his actions. Well, isn't that wonderful? Ask him if he's willing to take responsibility for my actions, along with my alimony, my car payments, and my gambling debts.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
He lives in an apple orchard, in a little orchard shack. His name is Jackson Thompson, but they call him Applejack. And Applejack was loved by everyone he ever knew. Well, Applejack picked apples, but he picked the banjo too. Go down to Applejack almost every day. We'd sit and drink Applejack that Applejack had made. Then he'd take his banjo down and he'd ask me if I'd sing. Well, he would pick the banjo and I'd play my tambourine. Play a song for me, Applejack, Applejack. Play a song for me and I'll sing. Now that was when I was just a kid, and now that I'm grown, all I I have is memories and old Applejack is gone. But he left me his banjo, and it always takes me back. Every time I play it, I still get Applejack. Play a song for me, Applejack, Applejack. Play a song for me, and I'll sing. Play a song for me, Applejack, Applejack. Play a song, let your banjo ring.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.